Welcome to the Jazz Treasury. My name is Rich Sylvester. Thank you so much for letting me in your ear. In this, the very first episode of the Jazz Treasury podcast, we take a look at Duke Ellington, the man and the music. This will be part one, Duke's early years, and part two, coming up next week, will focus on Duke's later years. To begin, I'd like to share a quote from Duke Ellington. "My men and my race are the inspiration of my work. I try to catch the character and mood and feeling of my people. The music of my race is something more than the American idiom. It is the result of our transplantation to American soil and was our reaction in plantation days to the life we lived. What we could not say openly, we expressed in music. The characteristic, melancholic music of my race has been forged from the very white heat of our sorrows and from our gropings. I think the music of my race is something that is going to live, something which posterity will honor in a higher sense than merely that of the music of the ballroom." Duke Ellington, 1931. That, ladies and gentlemen, was Coco, recorded by Duke Ellington and his orchestra back in 1940 in Chicago. And some of the members of the band at that time included people like Barney Bagard on clarinet, Ben Webster on tenor, Harry Carney on baritone, Johnny Hodges on alto, and Sonny Greer on drums. Coco by Duke Ellington and the African influence, very evident. Who was Duke Ellington? Duke Ellington was not only a great band leader and composer, he was a jazz genius. His true instrument was his orchestra. He controlled the creative process and shaped the results into a wonderful and utterly personal experience. Let's take a look at Duke's early life. From childhood, Edward Kennedy Ellington knew that he was destined for greatness. He was born on April 29th, 1899 in Washington, D.C., the only son of a respectable black middle-class family. He was tall for his age and his formal manners and elegant dress made him seem even older. At the age of 12, he started sneaking into burlesque theaters and pool rooms. This is where Duke first heard ragtime. At age 15, he composed his first piece of jazz, Soda Fountain Rag. At age 19, Duke married Edna Thompson, and 1 year later, their son Mercer was born. Around this time, he started to gather the first elements for what was to grow into the Great Ellington Orchestra. The great drummer, Sonny Greer, joined the band at this time. In 1922, the band set off for New York City, but struggled to survive. The dejected band returned to Washington, D.C. Their luck turned when Fats Waller chose Duke's band to play with him at Barron's Club in Harlem. So they returned to New York and played to rave reviews. At this time, Duke's band was called the Washingtonians, and he played piano and did a bit of arranging, but Elmer Snowden led the band. And when Snowden left, Duke used the band as his musical workshop. Musicians came and went, but Duke looked for distinctive sounds to create a distinctive musical language that was his to refine over the next 50 years. Duke's sound was rooted in the Roaring Twenties, the era of prohibition and gangsters. Duke got his big break when Irving Mills discovered him and got Duke's orchestra the plum job of resident band at New York's prestigious Cotton Club. They debuted on December 9, 1927. With him were some of the band members that would come to be known as the Ellingtonians: Jim Natton, clarinetist Barney Bigard, baritone saxophonist Harry Carney, and alto saxophonist Johnny Hodges. Using these voices, Duke produced the first great works: East St. Louis Toodaloo, Creole Love Call, Black and Tan Fantasy, The Mooch, and Black Beauty. Let's listen to three of these early Ellington tracks. These recordings were made in 1927 and 1928, and we'll be hearing East St. Louis Toodaloo, Creole Love Call, and The Mooch. Oh, You're listening to The Jazz Treasury with Rich Sylvester. That was early Duke Ellington. At the top of that set, we heard East St. Louis Toodaloo, Creole Love Call, and The Mooch. Later, Cootie Williams joined the band. His Cotton Club stretch lasted until 1931, and Duke became famous over this three-year period partly because CBS Radio broadcast live from the Cotton Club. American audiences heard his name and his music nightly, and it began to sell plenty of records. And these recordings spread his fame to Britain and the rest of the world. At this time, the band appeared in two short films, Black and Tan Fantasy and Double Check. Duke was distinguishing himself by avoiding the obvious, seeking unusual harmonies and strange juxtapositions. Soon after leaving the Cotton Club, Duke produced his most ambitious work, Creole Rhapsody, a 7-minute piece that took up both sides of a 78 RPM record, highly unusual in 1931. In 1933, Duke and the band set sail for London. The British took to his music immediately. Prince George requested Swampy River, and the Prince of Wales sat on Sonny Greer's drum kit and sought advice. At this point, Duke felt that he was treated as a serious artist. And travel was not easy for bands during the 1930s and 1940s, especially for black bands. With Irving Mills' help, Duke Ellington and his famous orchestra, as they were now called, traveled by rail in specially commissioned Pullman cars, complete with dining room, lounge, and bedrooms. Let's take a listen to two of Duke's big hits back at this time frame. Mood Indigo, recorded in New York City in 1930, and we'll hear Caravan, recorded in 1937. Thank you. Just to make you aware, this is only part one in the Jazz Treasury's look at Duke Ellington. Part two will come next week, and we'll look at the late 1930s and through the 1940s, and also look at some great duets that Duke Ellington did with some very, very good people. I should make you aware that the background music you're hearing underneath the spoken word is by Benny Green, and the song is called Folks That Live on the Top of the Hill. Well, that's it. That's the first edition of the Jazz Treasury. My name is Rich Sylvester, and thank you so much for letting me stay in your ear. And don't forget, next week now, we have part two of Duke Ellington's life and music, and we'll go through the 1940s right up to the 1970s and hear some great music he did with some other really good musicians on the side. So, until next time.